Thank you, and good morning to everyone. Thank you for joining us at this rather early time of the day, which is somewhat unusual. It might also be somewhat unusual that we are not offering any surprises, which these days often have been negative surprises. Let me assure you, UBM is on track for a record year. As you can see from the highlights on slide number three of our presentation, earnings per share up 30% year-on-year. Our financial position creates room for a new round of investments. We are securing our future profitability with these newly acquired projects. We will explain what we do to acquire profitable projects in a boom phase and with rising construction costs. Finally, and with a lot of dust in the air, let me also assure you that there are no indications for a change in fundamentals in our industry. Before looking into the future, Patric is taking a closer look at our 9 months figures. Patric, please.
Thank you, Thomas. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Would you please turn to slide number four now? As Thomas already mentioned, we are on track for a record year. Earnings per share rose by 30% year-on-year to 3.66 euros in the first three quarters. I want to point out that the bottom line performance is the best indicator for our underlying profitability. Remember, the EBT figure includes the earnings of our at-equity holdings after tax, and this is why you should look at the earnings after tax or the earnings per share. We are heading for more than 5 euros per share, which translate into a P/E ratio below 7.5x at the current trading level. Latest research suggests that we haven't reached the peak of our growth yet, so I leave it up to you, your judgment, if you think our strong fundamentals are already priced in. Let's get back to our current numbers and how we have achieved them. The earnings growth resulted primarily from increased property sales, combined with a strong focus on efficiency control. This is even more impressive when taking into account the compensation of the negative currency effects from the Polish zloty versus the euro, which amounted to roughly 7 million of negative effects at the end of Q3. EBT rose by 16% year-on-year to 35.4 million euros. Due to positive effects from deferred taxes, the reporting period saw a quite favorable tax rate of 22%. We are heading for a record year, both in terms of EBT and EPS. A record high of more than 50 million euros of earnings before tax and above 5 euros net profit per share is what we are expecting in 2018. I'm turning now to slide number five. On this chart, you can see that the strong earnings development had also positive effects on our financial position, which has never been stronger. Since year-end 2016, we have more than halved our net debt, reaching a total of 330 million by the end of Q3. This is a perfect proof of our self-financing power and the ability to steer the business in exactly the direction in which we want it to go. The net debt figure also demonstrates the success of our pure-play program and shows our ability to defrost cash by reducing our standing asset portfolio and executing our pure-play developer strategy. Of course, it also reflects the successful and profitable development activities of the last quarters. On top of the operational progress, the net debt development also shows the increasing trust in UBM from the debt markets. At the beginning of the year, we successfully issued a hybrid bond with a net effect of 50 million on net debt. Overall, we tapped the market 3x within the last 12 months with an overall volume of 352 million euros. This includes the successful issuance of the latest five-year retail 3/1/8 bond with a volume of 75 million euros, of which 25 million was an exchange. With a loan-to-value ratio of 30%, we are currently under-leveraged for a real estate developer. The low debt level, combined with high liquidity, creates room for new investments, which in turn will secure a sustainable high profitability. Thomas will now explain what kind of projects we have in mind to achieve what I just explained.
Yeah. Back to the world of brick and mortar, and I would ask you to turn to page number six. During the course of the last 9 months, we have already reported major project acquisitions in Prague, Vienna, Düsseldorf, or Katowice. However, we have not been sitting on our hands since the beginning of October. Rather, the contrary is the case. With the acquisition of a land plot of 2.3 hectares in Vienna's second district, right at the edge to the first district city center, we have acquired a large-scale project which is a worthy successor for our Quartier Belvedere Central development at Vienna's new central station. Let me only remind you that the sales volume there will ultimately add up to between 400 and 450 million euros. At the same time, we have acquired a former bank building in The Hague to convert it into a lifestyle boutique hotel. Altogether, we expect the volume of our new acquisitions to accumulate to between 150 and 200 million euros of cash out. I guess you ask yourself the question if it is not rather late in the cycle and how we are dealing with the clear challenges of the current marketplace. As I made clear at several occasions in the past, we assess Europe's room to maneuver regarding interest rate increases that could harm the real estate business as rather limited. Even if the language in Italy has tuned down and Theresa May is fighting bravely for a Brexit deal, the economic situation in Europe is too fragile to play around with interest rates. Yesterday's Fed statement, by the way, is cementing this view. And we believe the situation is not going to change within a time period of 2 to 3 years. Please follow me to page number 7, which summarizes the two current key operational challenges. Of course, the question number 1 is, how do you refill the pipeline with profitable projects when the market looks rather overheated? Let me start the answer with a confession. Almost all projects which have been turned down in the last 2.5 years by the committee that is responsible for it, not that have been brought to our attention, but almost all of them were a mistake to be turned down. However, hindsight is 2020. Today, we are hardly participating in any auctions, and if we do, we are usually not getting beyond the first stage. We have decided to focus on our key strengths and throw them full weight into the ring. What do I mean? As hotel operator number 1 in Europe, we are often getting approached for projects without having to proactively chase them. This can even be by a competitor who admits that the project is more profitable or de-risked by converting it into a hotel project and participating us. This is particularly true when it comes to our expertise, what hotel brand exactly could be the best fit for the specific location and how to negotiate the best contract, of course, from a developer's point of view, with the hotel operator and to some extent also with the hotel investor. We also like to make use of our financial muscle. Some of the bigger projects we have acquired would simply be too lumpy for a non-listed developer with less equity. Finally, we are benefiting from our long-standing presence in our core market and our reputation for which we have worked hard over decades. We are offered projects which never come to the market. Do not get me wrong, I'm not suggesting to acquire bargains. All it does, it cuts out of the equation raiders of fortune or people who bet on a further significant yield compression. You could say it cuts out the irrational element that we see in auctions of projects today. So the next question on your mind must be, what do we do about the rising construction costs? In this context, we are benefiting from our heritage. UBM is the result of a carve-out from a construction company. Construction expertise is not only part of our DNA, it can also be seen from our people's background. We are not a bunch of financial engineers, but of civil engineers. 50% of our 300 people development workforce have a technical background or are construction engineers, like on the board, Martin Löcker, our chief operating officer. This puts us in a position which we have more choices than only looking for a general contractor who's prepared to build the project for our calculated price. The issue is that the market at the moment is struggling with full capacity utilization on the subcontractor side. This is why many general contractors, going short at the time of taking on a contract from us, charge a high risk premium for doing so. UVM is able to avoid this risk premium. We are able to conclude direct contracts, for example, for the excavation works and the facade and whatever else on a separate agreement basis. Finally, and it would be wrong to claim that we have seen the current development at an earlier stage than all others, we have started an efficiency program at the beginning of 2017, so 2 years ago. We will harvest the fruits of this program in full next year. So there's only one major question left. What if we are wrong in our macro scenario? The answer we tried to give you is found on page number 8. If you want, we are taking out the hedge to minimize the risk. What do I mean? Despite the fact that we firmly believe that there is no change in the real estate boom, we are still forward selling most of our projects these days. One could hold against us that this is almost schizophrenia. Why not wait and make more money when the project is completed, all tenants moved in, or the hotel is fully occupied? The answer is never be arrogant enough to be 100% sure. Never get too greedy. Be prepared to share profits with a partner and thereby diversify your risk. Adhere to pre-letting rules and do not develop on a purely speculative basis. On an even more strategic level, it means focus. Do what you're best at and only in an environment you really know. Do not increase your risk by expanding to uncharted territory, be it geographically or in terms of asset classes. Finally, and as already mentioned before, do not let yourself be fooled by a boom and lose efficiency or lose focus on things like best practice. Let us turn to slide number 9. While we hear of deteriorating consumer, manufacturer, or whatever confidence indices, we are riding megatrends. No doubt, Berlin, as one of the two major hubs for startup money, is benefiting from Brexit. A 12% increase in prime office rents within a year is difficult to explain otherwise. In the past, we have talked a lot about a structural undersupply of apartments in both of our most important markets. This is Germany and Austria. And regarding hotels, private hotel owners are being squeezed out of the market by the big reservation engines of the large hotel chains and Airbnb. You've heard this story. A look at the most recent sales volumes and even more the prices paid by domestic and overseas investors made PwC talk about the rise of alternatives. Let me not be misunderstood. We are not naively thinking that there will never be an end to the current boom, but we do not see it anytime soon. And the best money can be made in a late phase of a cycle. You know this better than anybody else. As I mentioned in my introduction, it might come as a surprise that we are not making use of the current market uncertainties. No, we stay confident to see 2018 become the best year ever for UBM. Comparing our 9 month figures with our guidance on slide number 10 hopefully makes you join us in our confidence. We are only 80 million euros short of our total output guidance for the year at the end of September. We need to generate no more than 50 million of EBT and 1.35 euros of earnings per share in the last quarter. Finally, we have already exceeded our target equity by 20 million euros at the end of Q3. Hope you find all of this reassuring, and let me now open the call for questions and thank you for your attention.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we will begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touch tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you are using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selections. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And one moment for the first question, please. First question is from the line of André Remke with Baader Bank.
Yeah, good morning, sir. Thanks for the presentation. A number of questions, starting with the LTV topic. You mentioned that you feel to be under-leveraged for a real estate developer. What in general is the appropriate leverage for a developer and, of course, for UBN in particular? And what is the level you are expecting for the year end in terms of LTV? And what is the investment or acquisition power for the quarters to come? That's the first question, please.
Okay, may I take this question? The LTV currently is for sure a bit too low for a developer like UBM because it shows a bit that we are under-invested. So I may tackle the question from a different angle. So an LTV which is going beyond a 60% number would for sure be too high because that is a number where the capital market would tell us that no longer money is to be taken off us, taken by the market, or we could not longer launch any bonds. So it is anywhere between the 30 and the 60% number. You will see that the number is going up until year end. It is not a number we are currently guiding for. Same is true, by the way, that the net debt number will go up by the end of the year. You can see that because we have invested quite significantly in the fourth quarter. So if you ask myself where I feel comfortable in terms of LTV, I would say it is somewhere between 45 to 50%. That is a good number for us.
Okay. And given the 45 to 50%, what would be the roughly the investment potential you have on hand?
That is also a difficult one to answer because that is now asking the question, how much is the loan to value within a project? Currently, we see that we can still finance project with a 20 to 80 portion. That means 20% of what we bring in is equity. 80% can be taken by a project financing on the project level. If you are at that level with a 50%, you are currently at the balance sheet, I would say, 1.1 to 1.2 billion. If that changes significantly, it would shorten our balance sheet for sure, because we would have to invest more of our own money into a project.
Okay. And then you, second question, you expecting an acquisition volume 150 to 200 in the fourth quarter. I guess this includes the Vienna and the Netherlands project, and what is the volume also already with these two projects, and what remains for additional projects? So to get a feeling, what how many further projects you are ahead in the position of acquiring?
Good question. It is included. And that's by far the largest acquisition that we've made. We were asked by our partner, because Reitenburg still holds 10%, not to disclose the purchase price. While we are always disclosing the sales prices, we've agreed to this. And therefore, I'm struggling a little bit to give you exactly the number for the two projects, because it would easily for you to work it out. All I can say from today's point of view, and you know, until the ink isn't dried, you can't say it, we will have 200 million of investments rather than 150 million that I expect for Q4.
Okay, and this refers to the investments. What could be a potential development volume, a GDV?
The develop, The development volume in terms of pipeline, I've said we expect the pipeline, despite some major completions, to grow to a level of 2 billion, which would be an ultimate success. As I would like to remind you that our pipeline is not artificially blown up. We only account in our pipeline at the level of our participation. This is if we have 50%, and you have to expect that we share projects with partners according to the risk strategy that I've described before. We also account only 50% of the potential sales volume to come into it. We are also realistic in terms of timing. We are not kind of adding in projects that might take longer than the three and a quarter year that we are currently including in our project pipeline. I'm pretty confident that we can keep up the pipeline. What is more important, that we can keep it up with profitable projects. Otherwise, we wouldn't do it. That the 1.8 billion pipeline is a good guideline, and that we expect that pipeline to grow to 2 billion. That is then stretching our capacity within our HR capacity within UVM, really. If we wanted to go beyond, to always have a partner, and that brings down then the pipeline again.
Is the number of today 1.8 billion, potentially 2 billion, this is, we can take it as a three-year horizon?
At the moment, it's a three and a quarters horizon. It has something to do because I must be cautious, as the Zalando project is a big one that will leave us by end of the year. We have a 200 million project, and it must be substituted. Not an easy one, okay? We will always look at the beginning of the year at the four-year horizon and shrink this four-year horizon to a three and a quarter year horizon before we start again, because it would be unfair to restrict yourself to a three-year horizon if, say, completion of projects are in Q1 of the following year. It's a three and a half to four-year horizon. At the moment, it's a three and a quarter year horizon because we didn't want to include the projects beyond 2021. You get the details, by the way, also in the backup.
Yeah. This, from the backup, I saw that the larger project is will come on stream after your current three and a quarter horizon. This means that within the 2 billion, this larger project will be not included at the moment, but probably with the beginning of next year. Is it?
Yes. Still, we try to make your life as easy as possible, so we follow more and more the POC method. Of course, the issue is you can only kind of, you know, follow a POC logic if you can make a good educated guess of what project am I going to sell forward and what project am I not going to sell forward. And this is at the moment a bit the art of guesswork for the pipeline. You're absolutely right. We have a couple of projects that are hardly included at the moment, which when you add the year 2022, okay, when we give you the guidance for the pipeline, with our full year numbers in April, is going to benefit from these larger projects that are beyond 2021.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. First question, you mentioned the hotel project in the Netherlands. How does this fit in general into your regional strategy with the focus on Germany, Austria, et cetera? Is this, let's say, one-time opportunity in your excellent hotel business? And could we see further investment in, let's say, other larger cities in Western Europe?
Well, to a certain extent, it is opportunistic, no doubt about it, because it's not one of our defined core three markets. On the other hand, we've completed the Hyatt project in Amsterdam, Okay, and this made us popular enough that the owner of this former bank, and you can see it's quite an impressive building, that was kind of considering all kind of usages, approached us and said, is that also appropriate for hotel usage? We looked at it, okay, the numbers worked quite well, and we made him an offer. So the Dutch market is not a market that we do not know. We have had a steady presence in the Dutch market. We did a Crown Plaza. We did a Hyatt in both in Amsterdam, and now we've branched out, if you want, to The Hague. I do definitely not want to exclude that the same couldn't happen to one of our adjacent markets. What I can exclude is we wouldn't go to any exotic places, and remember, we are only in city tourism, okay, and nothing else.
Okay. That's clear. And very last and short question, probably you have provided the number, but can you give me an update on your disposals from the standing asset portfolio, what is left for sale?
Yes, you find it also in the backup. We've on slide number 27. We've made only 60 million of, you know, small assets that added up in the third quarter. I think we've made you aware of it. Still, the encouraging one is we've got only quote unquote, because it's getting tougher, of course, the more you are selling, 30 million to go for our guidance for mid 2019 and the 350 million.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That's from my side.
Sure.
And the next question is from the line of Stefan Schaaf with SRC Research.
Yeah, good morning, Thomas. Good morning, Patrick. This is Stefan from SRC. I have three questions. The first question is about last year you mentioned that you see a re-rating of continental Europe by overseas investors. What is your current view on that? And do you still see high demand from Asian countries? The second question is, can you give us a quick update on the Zalando building and also on the office provider project where you have an LOI, and where's the current status here? And the third question is about Poland. Your share in Poland went down to about, I think, 20 or 22%, as we can see on slide 25 of your presentation. What is your best guess for the development of your book in Poland? And will the share further go down? If I remember right, the Holiday Inn in Gdansk, just for instance, will be completed soon in the next half of the year.
Very good. Look, yes, we see overseas investors in almost all of the projects that we are selling. We don't see them bid as aggressively as they used to bid, because, you know, the first bids often are market entry bids. But I think I can go as far, and it is concerning your second question, that with the office provider, we are in exclusive contract negotiations with an overseas Asian investor. And the good thing is that the development here in the office provider, where we are also having our offices, is almost finalized. Okay. We've done a construction site party 2 weeks ago, but that is now speeding up, so that if we sign the contract, signing of the contract and closing of the project would coincide. When it comes to Zalando, which was second part of your second question, we've handed over the project flawlessly. And remember, that project was sold during the development phase. from a South Korean investor to a US asset manager. It still went really smooth. We are very proud, and you will see a couple of really beautiful pictures of this development, of which we are almost as proud as Zalando itself is in our annual report. It, I think, sets a standard. And the reason why we kept a low profile is because we wanted to keep a little bit in the backhand for the beginning of the year. Now, your last question is concerning Poland. Yes, we've promised and we've executed on bringing down the share of Poland in the book value portfolio breakdown. And the other chart I would like to point you to is the pipeline chart, which is on slide number 18, because if you look at slide number 18, we also give you a geographic breakdown of our pipeline. And here you can see that Germany and Austria are very strong with 41 and 36%, whereas in Poland at the moment, I must say, the pipeline is only consisting of 7%, which would point to a further shrinking of the Polish overall book values. Of course, we have a big business park in Warsaw, okay, which generates pretty good returns. And therefore, we have like a, if you want, in German, soccer, for Poland that will be going on for the foreseeable future.
Okay. What do you think about Poland's secondary cities? Warsaw is a bit mixed picture in my point of view, but also some other cities like, let's say, Dansk or Krakow or could be interesting or Breslau could be interesting. What's your opinion here? Or might there be in future some projects with good margins for you?
Well, we do have ongoing projects. There are hotel projects like the one I've mentioned that we've acquired in Katowice. And when it comes to hotels, we are focusing more at the moment to the secondary cities because they are undersupplied, which does not mean that we are not also pretty confident and upbeat for Warsaw. Warsaw has turned out to be a very good hotel location, but you must be very careful and diligent in what category and brand you're selecting, because there is a high presence of everyone in the Warsaw market already. And let me do a short advertising. We've refurbished the Intercontinental Hotel. So whoever thinks of traveling to Warsaw, I can recommend keep on staying in the Intercontinental Hotel. It's now again setting the standard for Polish five-star hotels.
Perhaps just one little follow-up regarding to your guidance. You guided that you will manage a pre-tax profit of more than 50 million. Do you have any feeling for 2019 for your pre-tax profit, what we could see there?
Well, you know, we have followed your advice, I think even your advice specifically to give early guidance, but we are not giving a guidance before we've harvested the ongoing year. And with the question always being, you know, what is pushed into the next year or what is actually going to be completed in a photo finish in this year. So it would be too early days. We are, as you know from the talks that you have with Anna or Christina, very confident of bringing continuity to our business, which means that if there is a record year 18, and we are confident that there is continuity in 19, it can't be this bad.
Okay. Yes, as you mentioned, the office provider project, there's an LOI, and let's see if it works out for more or signing this year. And okay, I can understand this point. Thank you very much.
Sure. Pleasure.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. And the next question is from the line of Bérénice Lecour. Please go ahead.
Well, good morning, all. Thanks for taking my questions. So three questions for me. The first one is on your efficiency program. So you expect a full impact of 12 million euros on your operating performances next year. Could you be a bit more specific on that? Notably, what do these 12 million euros come from exactly? Second question is on your guidance for this year. Q3 was a quieter quarter this year due to notably a very busy Q2 marked by the sale of key projects. So what makes you confident that you will be able to fill in your 15 million euros gap to reach your EBT guidance for this year of 50 million euros? And the third question is on the inflation of construction costs. Even though you boast a limited reliance on your general contractors, do you expect some pressure on your operating margins going forward? And if it's the case, how do you expect to compensate for that? Thank you.
Okay, Bérénice, maybe I start with the efficiency program. As you pointed out very correctly, we have guided that we will see 6 million of efficiency gains probably in our numbers this year, and we are confident that we can find them in our numbers and hopefully 12 million by next year. So you have asked where can you see them? One third of this number is roughly attributable to P&L type of costs, be it somewhere in the area of material costs or be it in the area of other operational costs or a small part maybe also in the area of personal costs, but please take into account that there are special effects as well when it comes to personal costs like inflation rates and all these kind of things. And 8 million is to be found in investment costs. There you can see that only when we investing into a project, and you will see that later in hopefully better gains we are achieving. So the 12 million you have to divide into these two pieces, one third of it directly through the P&L and two thirds of it when a project comes to its end.
Yeah. Well, we've said Q3 is a quiet quarter, and it was a quiet quarter, but it was far from being disappointing. It was exactly how we've expected it. I remind you that completion of Zalando is happening in Q4. Now, Zalando was under the POC method, but that already gives a quite healthy boost to the profitability side for Q4, and we have a couple of contracts in negotiation where according to likelihood part of it will be materializing in Q4 and part of it will be materializing in Q1. So we wouldn't be as confident as we were on this call if we weren't too sure on the 29th of November that could be reached, but we are not there, quite honestly. We still need a little bit of luck, as is always the case, and no hiccups in the final contract negotiations when it comes to disposals. Now, construction costs, that's a difficult one because the numbers are all over the place when it comes to what is the real inflation. The construction companies claim that the construction price index is not fully reflecting the increases. The reason for it is that it's a mix of civil engineering and building engineering and whatever kind, and you have different increases everywhere. I am not deep enough and close enough to make a general statement. Our experience is that a lot of our inflation, construction cost inflation, comes from the premium that the general contractors are trying to charge us because they found it difficult for contracts that they've concluded in the past to find the subcontractors for it. Now, a subcontractor is not just a bunch of bullish bricklayers, the subcontractors is a facade company, because as a general contractor, okay, every single Gewerke, as we call it in German, every single, you know, bit of the construction is a subcontractor. Now, if you can cut out the premium that they are currently charging in order not to be caught on the wrong foot, that's a substantial cutback of the construction inflation. Still, I don't want to kind of, you know, sweet talk the fact that construction costs overall are going up. This is the reason why we do the efficiency program. This is exactly why we feel that we have to do everything in order to protect our margins. I hope that I now finally confuse you with the statement that we have always claimed and said that some of the projects, okay, like the Leuchtenberg Ring projects, are generating margins, okay, and they will be difficult to achieve going forward. At the same time, you know, the market is still very hot, and the prices at which we've forward sold our existing projects, okay, date back to 2 years ago. And the best example, and I'm proud to mention this example, is we've sold Zalando for 196 million euros. And we're very proud, and everybody applauded, and everybody said this is only because the overseas investors are spoiling their prices, and what lucky punch this was, and whatever. Now, Zalando, according to media reports, I'm not able to give you any other than the media reports, was sold for 235 million euros before completion. And here you can see, you know, all the leeway is basically the yield compression that we didn't catch with the old projects, but that we are catching with the new projects, which does not mean, and that's my final statement, that we believe in a significant further yield compression going forward. There might be a certain yield compression, but it's in the basis points arena and not in the percentage point arena, as you could see in the last 3 years. Does this answer your question?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bernice.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one. Next question is from Julius Genauer with Hauck & Aufhäuser.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. One short question. So could you please briefly explain why the output in the service segment declined quite strongly in Q3 compared to last year?
Well, Julius, let me start the remark by saying how proud we are that now Hauck is also producing research, because many of the other listeners know each other, as they are always the same people on the call. And you're the new kid on the block. I very much liked your research, but I'm not going to answer this question because my CFO is already kind of, you know, pushing me that he wants to answer the question. So I hand it on to Patrick.
Julius, a good question. The service revenues, they have to be seen always and linked always to the projects which are currently running and under construction. So one of the biggest projects we had was the Leuchtenberg Ring, which was under construction until half year. That ended or is in the phase of being finalized soon. So the service revenue from this one is not longer there. Same is true for Zalando, which was also at its end. So new projects which are kicking in, they might come a little bit later into the construction phase and therefore into this service we are then charging internally into this project.
Let me, because I can't be quiet, let me add one more thing, because I know how you look at it. I personally do not give high attention to the service revenues, because basically they are with a handling fee. Okay, so the margin you look at is a very thin and small one, and not comparable to our core business development business, and not as important even as is the 5% contribution or the 5 million EBT contribution from the hotel operations side. So in order to focus your attention perfectly, I would recommend you to look at the pipeline and the potential profits we are making out of our development business, and look at the hotel operations business. The rest is, I wouldn't dare to say negligible, but of a much kind of lower profile importance.
Yeah, thanks. Just for my understanding. So it's
sure, sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There are no further questions at this time. I hand back to Thomas Winkler for closing comments.
Well, thank you for joining us this early in the morning. I know that you're getting up late and have a relaxed day. But kidding aside, I hope you like this because we are considering maybe doing our conference calls always in the morning. That makes it easier for you to write the updates and ask us the questions that are still open. Thank you for all the questions. They also prove that we are starting to get our story across, because all of the questions were really, really good and go right to the core of the matter. I wish you a good day and looking forward to speaking to you at the occasion of our full year results. Bye-bye.